5 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour, welcome into the whole show powered by PDC Energy. I am Brady Hull, and we've got Angel on the other side of the bulletproof glass ready to rock and roll here on a very busy Thursday for us. We're going to have Kevin Lytle on from the Fort Collins, Colorado, on our CSU Rams insider. I believe, I tweeted it, so it must be true, I believe we're going to get my player of the week on the show. Player of the week, Dalton Knecht for the UNC Bears. The guy has been on an absolute tear the last 2 to 3 weeks or so. So, man, it's been exciting to see what he can do. I mean, right now, it's safe to say he's the best player. He's the best player on this team. So we're excited to talk about that with Dalton coming up in the 12 o'clock hour. And my friend Steve Baker from Friends of Baseball will join us. Friends of Baseball coming up Saturday. What a great tradition. Tim Raines is going to be the guest speaker there. He'll be signing autographs at the conclusion of the breakfast. Man, I always love this event. You can get out there and there's a huge auction. So many cool prized items out there, sports memorabilia that you can get your hands on. And then breakfast burritos, a chance to talk baseball. Been to these several years in a row now, so we absolutely love Friends of Baseball. So we'll talk to Steve about that coming up a little bit later on. Angel, let's get to the good, the bad, and the ugly from the last 24 hours or so. Presented by FMS Bank, banking made simple. For more on FMS Bank, check them out online, fmsbank.com/KFKA. Okay, this is good and weird. I like Nathaniel Hackett. I agree with Tanner. He's talking about it this morning on the show. He's a good dude. So I root for Nathaniel Hackett. He is going to be the offensive coordinator for the New York Jets, 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 Jets. Bizarre? I got thoughts on this, but I'm going to say good because I like Nathaniel Hackett. I want good people to succeed. Maybe they're not the most qualified. I don't know. But is that the underlying thing here? Is that really just a move to go get Nathaniel or to go get Aaron Rodgers? That's what we thought with the Broncos last year, but it didn't work out. The bad for me, and I got a lot of thoughts on this and we'll talk about throughout the day. The bad was, okay, the Nuggets lost, but really it's the scheduling of this. The NBA is dubbing this week Rivalry Week. So you saw Memphis last night playing Golden State, the Nuggets, and Milwaukee. It's a rivalry because they're two top teams. They got two of the best players in the league. But you didn't see Joker last night because it was on a back-to-back. The NBA scheduling. Why? I know scheduling's hard. It's difficult. You're trying to figure it all out. There's got to be a different way, Angel. There has to be a different way and not doing back-to-backs anymore. I mean, it's just, it doesn't make any sense to me. And I get it. The scheduling is what they'll tell you. It's just crazy. Absolutely ridiculous.
It is crazy, and the NBA really does try to hype up their matchups.
Yeah.
And it's hard. You have to put the schedule out early so you can get ticket sales and all that stuff set up. But when you have the last four MVPs scheduled to play each other, it's not on prime time. It's on Milwaukee's broadcast. It's on altitude, so only your local stations can watch it. Jokic isn't playing because they only got to Milwaukee 4 hours
right
before the game.
Right.
And they don't take into consideration travel issues. You cannot travel and play a basketball game the next night.
It's
not possible. It's not safe players. You get mad at players for doing load management. They have to. They are not physically able to play these back-to-back games.
Not if they want to be fresh next week.
Not after a 10-hour flight, after a delay, after a delay, after delay. You get to your hotel at 2 a.m., sleep for a couple hours, get up, breakfast, shoot around, go back to sleep, and then the game.
Not if you want to play well against Philadelphia on Saturday. You're not playing Joker in the back-to-back there, especially as you mentioned, with the way the travel is structured, you know, flying around, getting in late, all of that. The game was what it was. Milwaukee won 107-99. It was a 10-point spread. So you covered the spread there. Congratulations. I'm just going to say the start of this one, and I'm just saying it's ugly because it was ugly basketball for Bruce Brown to start the fourth quarter. He ended up with 12 points, but he had 6 turnovers. His sequence in the first quarter, Angel, was foul, turnover, foul, turnover, foul. Three fouls and two turnovers in the first, like, 2 minutes of the fourth. That's the ugly. It is what it is. I mean, I didn't really expect Denver to win this thing. They were staying in touch. It was very close for most of this game. But a lousy start in the fourth. But I don't think Malone cares. I mean, you saw him at the end of the game clapping like, good job, guys, good job. I don't think it was a loss that was just going to happen. And that's because the NBA doesn't schedule. Here's Michael Malone talking about the schedule makers and kind of his thoughts on the whole process.
I think when any question about the schedule is, you know, I always hate our schedule. I'm going to hate our schedule every year it comes out. And so is 29 other coaches. They're going to look at it and they're going to say, there's some personal bias here. We get no respect. The league has an impossible job. I mean, you're not going to keep 30 teams happy with the schedule. But with that being said, I think Philadelphia played tonight. They don't play again until Saturday, I believe. We play tonight. We don't play again until Saturday. They're setting that game up for Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, ABC. So those players will likely be available. To your point, this is a team, in the last 5 years, Milwaukee's won more games than anybody. We've won more games than anybody in the Western Conference. Giannis is a two-time MVP. Nicole's a two-time MVP. To have this game the second night of a back-to-back, not a national TV game, and a lot of our guys weren't able to play tonight, you know, you would hope that they would set this game up to be a little bit more of a marquee matchup.
Milwaukee plays tomorrow, but it's just, I don't know why you can't fudge the numbers a little bit here, fudge the travel schedule just a bit. And again, we chatted about this yesterday, and we had some texters like, oh, basketball players aren't tough and all that stuff. I mean, when you play a basketball game, it's pretty grueling, man. I mean, you could say what you want about the NBA and how they play, whatever. I'm a fan. I love watching it. But these guys aren't just like playing a light game of pickup out there, folks. These guys are going at it hard. I watched the Memphis Golden State game last night. That was such an intense game. But they kept tagging everything. Rivalry week. It's NBA rivalry week. And part of that is Denver and Milwaukee. It's rivalry week because you got a two-time, as Malone said, two-time MVPs, two of the best teams in the NBA. It's a rivalry because, you know, maybe it's a preview for the finals. But I just don't understand why we can't get a handle on the scheduling. COVID taught us so much, Angel. We can schedule anything that we want. We can reschedule. We can cancel. We can play a game in the middle. For football, we can play a game on a Wednesday. And you mean to tell me the NBA can't figure out how to not have back-to-backs anymore? I remember 10 years ago, they used to have back-to-back-to-backs, a couple, like one or two a year. You'd play three nights in a row. You're not getting as good at basketball. This is why you don't see colleges do. Yeah, they do it in their tournaments. They do it in March Madness. That's part of the madness of it. I'll tell you right now, as much as we love March Madness, and we do, do you think you're getting your best basketball when these teams are playing back-to-back?
No.
You're not. Or even in the tournament, though, they at least have a day off in that first weekend. It goes every other game. It starts Thursday. The teams that play Thursday play Saturday. So you're not even playing back-to-back there. But you don't do it in college regular season.
They're also not traveling.
Yeah, you're not traveling. You're set there. You're set in stone there. But it is madness, and it's like, are you getting your best basketball? Everybody argues that Thursday's not your best football because teams are playing on a Sunday, and then they got to turn around and play Thursday. It's true. There's truth to that. There's a reason why in the NBA Finals, you'll see game one on a Monday, game two's like on a Thursday. It's because you know you're getting your best basketball when there's time in between. That's just how it is. So, yeah, if you circled that game thinking, oh, Denver, Milwaukee, late January, you know, we haven't hit the All-Star break yet, but still teams are starting to position themselves in the standings, and yet you're going to get that. And I don't blame Malone for saying, oh, man, we just got in, late plane flight, crazy game the night before. We got our superstar who's already had kind of some wrist injuries that we've been monitoring all year. Not an injury, but some discomfort. Why risk it? Let me ask you this. You know, just throwing it out there. Do you think the NBA should go down to 72 games?
Yes.
You do?
Absolutely.
As a fan, I want to see basketball all the time. But doesn't it add more to each game? If you took away 10 games from the regular season, just 10, that would make every game. That would mean by the time you're at game 20, things are getting a little more interesting. The first 20 games of the 82-game schedule, we always say it. Teams are figuring it out. They're finding themselves, whatever. I think if you cut it down to 72, and again, owners won't go for this because they're going to lose 5 home games. But would there be more of a chance for sellouts if you did 72?
I think there would be, because I think the trend in viewership for the NBA fluctuates throughout the season. Obviously, October, November, December, nobody's watching.
Nobody's really into it unless you're like a diehard fan.
It doesn't really pick up till right around the All-Star break.
Yeah.
It's when you get to see all of the stars. You get to see who is who and who's having a good year and all of that. And then you follow those guys out throughout the playoffs. And really, I bet the majority of NBA viewership is playoffs. Everyone loves playoff basketball, especially in the NBA. So making those games more valuable because you have healthier stars, you have your dynamic duos, you have your team basketball, you have your superstars at full strength for the biggest games of the year, yeah, we don't need 10 games in October.
What about 62?
Yep.
52?
What are they going to do with this in-season tournament? What is that?
Oh, don't even.
Is that another six games?
You want to know when you know you have a sports problem? I had a dream about that last night. Seriously, it's weird that you bring it up. It's like deja vu. I had a dream that randomly the Nugget, it was like, oh, the midseason tournament's starting. And I woke up like, well, they didn't start very well. They just lost to Milwaukee. And I'm like, wait a second. That was a weird dream. The NBA is trying to add more to their regular season to make more games must-see TV. This in-game tournament, when are they starting that? Is that next year or in-season tournament?
I think so.
So what do you get if you win it? A trophy? Is it seeding?
I think it's to help alleviate tanking. So it's like,
but what do you,
bottom tier teams, you can't lose. You can't like tank your season for a draft pick.
But what do you get for it? If I win the mid-season, like, is everybody in it?
I don't know. Let me
yeah, like, see if you can find some detail. We used to have the details, but I forgot. It's been so long ago. The NBA has been trying to edit things for a while now. Of course, the play-in tournament, which is interesting. The idea, that's another one to try to prevent tanking, is now, you know, instead of the 9th and 10th team, 11th team that's not quite in the playoffs, now you can go all the way down to 12, 13, 14 even, who's still fighting for the playoffs. But the whole idea, if you're the NBA, I want to make every game more valuable. Owners make their money on ticket sales and advertising and all that stuff. But I just kind of start to think, man, if you don't have to have a game on a Wednesday, instead you're playing like Saturday and then you play again on a Thursday and then again on a Sunday, I think that more people would look at it and go, I have less opportunities to see this team, so I need to get out, and then better chance of selling your stadium or your arena out every night.
Okay, so how the NBA in-season tournament would work. NBA teams would play, quote, cup games throughout November. The 8 teams with the best records in those games would advance to a single elimination tournament in December. The other 22 teams would continue their regular season. All in-season tournament games would count as part of an 82-game schedule. The two teams that will reach the final will end up playing one extra game during the regular season. The NBA and NFL, the NBA and Players Association are still working to finalize the in-season tournament concept, which includes to be determined prizes for 8 teams that advance to single elimination. This sounds like the dumbest thing ever.
What is your prize?
Why do this?
Hang a banner that says we won the mid-season tournament.
I don't understand it.
Who gets to pick
which game is an important game?
Well,
and if you know, okay, this game upcoming against Milwaukee is a cup game, but we don't really care about this tournament, so why are we going to play our starters for it?
So it's all just it's still just the regular season.
Yes.
They're not designing it in a different way. They're just saying
it's kind of like this game for these two teams is going to be a cup game. And the winner of that game gets a 1-0 score in the tournament standings for the midseason.
So basically, they wouldn't have to do anything different. They would just say, oh, by the way, it's January 26th. The Nuggets-Milwaukee game is game one between those two. And if you lose, you're out, but you still play on Saturday against Philadelphia.
It would be like a secluded tournament.
Okay.
So like the eight teams that have the best record in their cup games would be secluded off in their own tournament. Everybody else is playing as normal.
That's so stupid. What happens if... So you said the other teams are going to have their 82.
Two teams will play 83.
But
games.
What if you get eliminated in the first round in single elimination? Do you just go back to your schedule?
Yep.
You just dip back out of it? I don't understand that at all. My brain is small. I get it. But I just don't... I don't understand that. That is silliness to me. Just absolutely bizarre. You got the Lonster? Lonster, it's been a while, man. What's up, dude?
Hey, how you guys doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm trying to figure out this midseason
tournament
thing.
You know what? I've heard that. I don't get that one at all. That don't make a bit of sense.
Like, we try to build up our finals and our championship game. We're going to dilute it a little bit if we say we have a midseason tournament here. That really means nothing. I mean, do you get a draft pick out of it? Do you get money out of it? What is really in it for the teams?
You know, I think you get a can of Planter nuts or something.
That would be, I'd be in for that. I'd be down for that.
We too. You know, get your supply of all the nuts you can handle, you know?
I like it, man. Lonster, all right, here's our poll question today. I'll throw it at you. If it comes down to these two, who would you pick as the next head coach for the Broncos? D'Amico Ryans, defensive coordinator for the Niners, or David Shaw, former head coach of Stanford?
You know what? I kind of like the David Shaw thing.
I do too. I like it better than Ryans. I don't know why.
Yeah, I do too, because, you know, the guy's been around. He used to coach the NFL too.
Yeah, he was in some assistant whatever position groups and all that stuff. And I'm not saying that David Shaw's my guy number one. I'm leaning toward that over D'Amico Ryans. And I also think that's where the Broncos are going to go with this.
Yeah, I kind of got a feeling on this, too. I think that we're going to get this here sooner or later, I'm hoping, you know.
Someday we'll find out who the head coach is. Lonster, more importantly, what's for lunch today, my man?
You know what? I'm having a Mexican casserole with hot sauce and some cherry tomatoes to dunk inside that thing.
Man, you always have cherry tomatoes, no matter what season it's in. You're always ready with those.
I'll tell you what, it don't get better than that.
No, it doesn't. Lonster, appreciate your call, my friend.
Hey, you know what? You guys have a good day.
All right, First Advantage text line 888-530-0043. There it is. That's the poll question of the day. If it comes down to these two coaches, or guys, who would you pick as the next head coach for the Broncos? D'Amico Ryans or David Shaw? Those are the names that are kind of rising up because we haven't heard anything about Sean Payton. We don't know what's going on there. Harbaugh's back in Michigan, we think. He was in their, like, weight room, but he hasn't signed a new contract yet. And then Dan Quinn, I don't know. We'll talk more about that on the other side. It's 24 minutes after 11 o'clock. Don't go anywhere. A lot to break into. And why is the coaching search for all of the openings taking so long? Does that mean we don't have good enough candidates out there? The NFL's changing how they're doing things. What is it? Is it a problem? We'll talk about it next.
The UNC Bears play in Northern Colorado's voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, what's going on? This is Justin Adams with CBS 4 down in Denver, Colorado, and you're listening to the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
Orthopedic and Spine Center of the Rockies. Listen, guys, if you've been in Northern Colorado for even a short amount of time, you probably know someone that has been affected by Orthopedic and Spine Center of the Rockies, or maybe they helped you out at some point in your life. They helped me out. Orthopedic and Spine Center of the Rockies is celebrating over 52 years of being specialists in the medicine of motion. Check them out online, orthohealth.com. I had some shoulder issues a few years back. Luckily, didn't need surgery or anything like that, but they went through this therapy stuff with me and different workouts I could be doing to help. And man, I tell you, it was months of just pain. couldn't lift weights, couldn't do the things I wanted to do. But because of their therapies, I was able to get rid of that pain and get right back at it. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. Our poll question is up, and maybe it's going to be irrelevant very soon. If it comes down to these two, who would you pick as the next head coach for the Broncos, D'Amico Ryans or David Shaw? 66% of the Hooligans are saying D'Amico Ryans. Well, that's good because Zach Stevens and Kliss and Benjamin Albright, a lot of our friends and insiders that cover the Broncos are starting to get an inkling that it's going to be D'Amico Ryans as the next head coach for the Broncos. Obviously, that cannot be announced this week. They can't do a second interview with him until next week is over. If San Francisco wins, even if they win, the Broncos can interview D'Amico Ryans again. But they can't, like, I don't think they can make it known that they hired him. But they can sit down with him for a second interview. They can walk away from the interview, and I'm sure they can walk away and say, yeah, you're going to be the coach. You in? Yeah, I'm in. Cool. We'll announce it once you guys win the Super Bowl. How about that? D'Amico Ryans. Who would have thought? That, I mean, that's just where we're headed right now. That's what it's looking like at this point in time. And I think Greg Penner's going to have some splaining to do. Like, at the beginning of this process, it didn't sound like they were going to go with a guy that had never been a head coach before. Well, the two guys that were are it seems to be, the two guys that are at the top have never been an NFL head coach, David Shaw and D'Amico Ryans. If this fails, oh my. I'm hopeful. Listen, I don't have a dog in the fight. I got texters thinking I'm all in on David Shaw. I don't have a dog in the fight. Who's going to connect with Russell Wilson the best? You know, Dan Quinn's name appealed to me. Sean Payton's name appeals to me, but all the baggage and the draft pick and stuff, no, I think that got me out on that one. Harbaugh appealed to me, but he's weird. He's weird. Could two weirds make a normal with Harbaugh and Russell Wilson? I don't know. D'Amico Ryans? I mean, everything I hear is that he's amazing. Didn't he play in Houston? He played with Kareem Jackson in Houston. Would he consider that above Denver to go back to where he played football? There's that. The longer this goes, though, and the more, like, listen, I love Zach Stevens. I love our insiders. But every one of them has said so many different things. We've all been saying so many different things because we keep hearing every day something different. Now, is that Greg Penner doing a really good job of covering it up, covering his tracks? Or is that bad because, oh, no one's really rising to the top because maybe nobody really wants it that much? I don't know. 32 minutes after the hour. Let's talk about that coaching search with all the teams. Why is it taking so long? We'll discuss that later in the program. Kevin Lytle will join me next. Can Colorado State get it going? They have some big battles coming up. They lost to Wyoming last time around. Can they figure it out and position themselves for a good spot in the Mountain West Conference tournament? 32 minutes after the hour, let's jump out and get the latest on the local Sports Flash.
This is Nico Medved, the men's basketball coach of the Colorado State Rams, and you're listening to The Hull Show on 1310 KFKA.
A lot going on, really, or a lot not going on. It depends on how you want to look at it with the Broncos head coaching search. So we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. We'll have Dalton Connect joining the program at 12:05. He was my player of the week this week. The guy's been on a tear. And later on, we'll talk some friends of baseball, too. A great local event happening here in Greeley this Saturday. But now we've got Kevin Lytle, our insider for all things Colorado State. The voice of reason, I could say. Kevin Lytle, my man, with the Fort Collins Colorado, and always love catching up with you, man. Kevin, are you there? Kevin Lytle. Oh, that is not Kevin. That is a robot. That is R2-D2 or something. He did not like it that I introduced him as the voice of reason. That is why he hung up the phone. And that scares me because Kevin should take that as a compliment. that I called him that. Kevin, I called you the voice of reason, and you hung up. Like, is that not a compliment to you?
I was just so taken aback. I was like, I must be in the wrong place.
I don't belong here. No, that's not going to work. Kevin will join us in studio a little bit later on today for Rams Weekly. Kevin, that Wyoming game, like the first couple of minutes, I didn't think anybody was ever going to score. I just didn't think there were any points going to happen in that game.
Yeah, it took like 3 minutes for the first bucket. It was, I guess, fitting for those two teams and the seasons they've gone through that it would start that ugly.
Yeah, well, Isaiah Stevens got his record, so we don't have to talk about that anymore. He is the all-time leading assist man for Colorado State, and so that was cool, but they couldn't get the win. They lose. They made a heck of a comeback, though, but they end up losing 58-57 to the Cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, that game in a lot of ways was a capsule for the season. First 20 minutes, CSU was frankly pretty bad in every way. Sloppy with the ball, not great on defense. And then the last 20, they're pretty much good every way. I mean, that run in the middle, 15-0 run, held Wyoming scoreless for what seemed like forever. It was CSU at its best, but the problem when you dig a hole that big, it's really hard to get back, and then your margin for error is just so small. And, CSU didn't do a ton wrong at the end, but again, your margin for error is so small because you were so far behind, and I'm not sure controversial foul call is the right word, but certainly one CSU didn't like, to end it. And, CSU had a chance. They had a couple possessions right before that to either extend a lead or get a lead, and they couldn't score. CSU was really bad in the paint, which is weird because CSU is a really good two-point shooting team, but they missed like 11 layups. So it's kind of, like I say, just a capsule for the season. There was plenty of good, but plenty of really bad, and that's kind of what this team is right now. It's just a roller coaster.
Kevin, what did you make of that final call, that very controversial call? You know what Twitter made of it, but what did you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, I can see how it could be a call to foul. I think it's pretty soft no matter what the circumstance is, and then especially soft considering, 2 seconds left. And, Jalen Lake did pretty much how you draw it up defensively. He, kind of walled him up, went up straight. CSU's argument is the attacker jumped into him, and so your arms, obviously, if you get jumped into your chest, your arms are going to come down. So that's not, it's not a foul. On the defender. So, yeah, I didn't love the call, but I don't think it was the worst call I've ever seen either. And, again, Nico Medved certainly wasn't thrilled with it, I'm sure, but to his credit, I think he's very right on this, is people get so obsessed with the last call or the last play, but there are, a million plays during a game. He said CSU lost the game in the first half, and I would have to agree with that.
Kevin Lytle is joining us from the Fort Collins Coloradoan on our First Advantage hotline. The Colorado State Rams now are pretty darn close to the bottom of the barrel, sitting at 2-6 in the conference, and the team that's worse than them just beat them the other day. So what's the state of this team? How's everybody doing? As far as when you talk to these players, are spirits up? Are they down? Are they confused? How's Coach Medved these days?
Yeah, I mean, certainly not up. I'd be a little concerned if right. Everyone was feeling happy-go-lucky right now. But it's, I don't want to say confusion. It's not confusion, but sort of a perplexing feel, I think, within the team because they know they can be good and in moments are quite good. The best example, of course, is that St. Mary's win. I mean, that is still, arguably the best win any Mountain West team has had this year. So CSU was limited. I mean, they're missing several guys in that game. So they're kind of just baffled that they can be that good and then at times quite bad. And, this Wyoming game, is that game came down to the final possession. The previous three were all overtime games, which obviously basically means it's a one possession game, and CSU only won one of them. So they're kind of sitting there, feeling like, we could have more wins. This CSU team isn't like the worst in Division One or anything. And, there are some metrics that are pretty eye popping when you look at them about how, whatever you want to call it, misfortunate CSU has been in results. So it's almost just a baffled feeling, and certainly frustrated that they can't string, you know, this good play together more often.
It is interesting because you just, I mean, you look back at the schedule. Obviously, they beat St. Mary's. USC, they were battling. I think they lost by 10 or 9 or something. The New Mexico game wasn't a complete thrashing. Nevada, I thought they certainly had a chance to win that game on the road. They had the lead late in that one, too. They beat Fresno State. Air Force was an ugly game, but they had chances to win it. They beat UNLV. San Diego State, they go to overtime, as you mentioned. The Wyoming game was close. That's what's crazy is when you look at the record, and I know it hurts to look at 2-6 and 10-11, but they are close, and I suppose that's a positive. I don't know if that's going to be okay for fans in general, but that's at least a good sign. It says they're not getting blown out the door by anybody in this conference, although, Kevin, maybe that changes this weekend.
Yeah, I mean it.
I think we might have lost Kevin. We might have lost Kevin again. All right, so I was just looking at the schedule and thinking back to some of these games I watched. I mean, USC, yeah, it didn't feel like they were going to win that game, but USC didn't run away with that game. Kevin got Kevin back. We were just talking a little bit about that Boise State game coming up. And again, the schedule, they've been close in a lot of these games, and that's at least the positive right now for the Rams is they've hung in there. They're not getting blown out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the good and the bad. I was talking to someone in the program, and they said they basically went, you know, I almost hate to say this because I hate when losing teams say, well, we're better than our record, because no, you're not. You are what your record is. But their point was, you know, we can be much better than this. You know, many of those games should have been won. Like I say, CSU, they're, you know, like 110, 120-ish in the country in most metrics, which, you know, obviously isn't amazing, but it's not like a terrible team or anything. So there's this huge frustration, and it's just hard to predict. I mean, I could make an argument for, you know, CSU going and grinding out a tight win in Boise. I could also see CSU getting the doors blown off them in Boise. So it's just really impossible to predict what this team is because they just can't string together that consistency. It seems like we've kind of been saying the same thing for, you know, a month or two now, but it really is just the story of this team.
Kevin Lytle joining us from the Fort Collins, Colorado one. Kevin, how about the women's side of things, man? They have been really good this year. And I'm looking at the UNLV situation, the matchups they've had there, and I'm thinking maybe they can't get them in the regular season, but maybe they get into the tournament, third time's a charm.
Yeah, I think that's certainly where the eyes for CSU are pointing. You know, it was a great chance for the Rams to win that game last weekend against UNLV. They just didn't shoot well. I think overall their looks were pretty good. So again, I think that's a empty situation of, you know, if they get those looks again, you would think they'll win because generally it's a good shooting team. But UNLV does kind of have their number, and I sure hope it comes down to the championship game in Vegas for UNLV and CSU because I think they're clearly the best two teams in the conference. The way the Mountain West is on the women's side, it's pretty much a one-bid league. So I think it should be those two teams playing for a title. I hope it is because that should be a really fun championship if it comes to that.
No question about it. They've been both of those contests have been close, too. But that would be I agree. I think that would be must-see, no question, if those two end up in the tournament, in the championship game in the Mountain West Conference tournament. Kevin, any news on the front for CSU football? Any highlights? Anything we need to really be talking about now? We're kind of ramping up. We're a couple of months away from spring ball. We're not that far away. Any highlights that you want to bring to us today, talking about football?
Yeah, I was going to say there are a few kind of big picture things. You know, the second signing period is next week, and it won't be huge for CSU, but there will be a few guys. I know they're still recruiting. They're, you know, probably going to add on the O-line, probably receiver, you know, so some pieces here and there. And then, yeah, spring ball is, you know, less than 2 months away. April 22nd will be the spring game for people who want to circle that on their calendars. But, you know, this spring will be pretty interesting because CSU has a lot more of the pieces in, all the systems are in. I guess you could also say a lot is out as far as, you know, some of the players that for whatever reason didn't want to be part of this program. So this should be a roster that's a lot more what Jay Norvell wants. So So, yeah, there's a lot coming really soon here. And also a schedule should be coming probably within the next month. We know all the opponents and everything and a few of the dates, but the Mountain West schedule should come out roughly within a month. So that'll be nice, too, so that we can really start circling the calendar for the must-see events.
Kevin, I know it's January 26th, and your answer will be impossible, I'm sure. But just following this team as closely as you do, do you think they're going to be much improved next season as far as looking at that win-loss column?
I think they should be, at least several. I think five should be your bare minimum. Looking at the schedule, ideally, I think this team should be aiming for a bowl and getting back to a bowl. If it's three again, that would be a really disappointing season. So, I think five should be kind of your minimum threshold to look for because, the non-con schedule is still tough, but certainly easier than last year's. And then the Mountain West, it's a pretty solid Mountain West, tough schedule, but I think you have some good home games, to maybe steal a home win over a Boise or something like that or an Air Force. So, I think CSU's win total better be going up. I think everyone in that program be hugely disappointed if it's around the same number.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that maybe today, get into some more hoops talk with you and Chris Abshire. So we're looking forward to that. Kevin, my friend, always appreciate you, man. And we'll talk to you later for Rams Weekly.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. McLean texting in brings up something interesting from some texters yesterday. About the Nuggets. Should we be a little concerned? Let's talk about it next, 49 minutes after the hour. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy right here on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
The UNC Bears playing Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Steve Fairchild at FairchildQBTraining.com, and you are listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
So Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter with NBC Boston and the Monday Morning Quarterback, also does a show 985 The Sports Hub, legitimate figure in the sports media world, said this, and I'll get into the Nuggets in a minute. Albert Breer tweeted, Jets head coach Robert Saleh interviewed over 15 candidates for the offensive coordinator job. What won Nathaniel Hackett the job? Ability to connect with players, innovative teaching techniques, play calling experience, proven production run game, has won with average QB and an elite QB. This is the interesting part. Did he win with an elite? I guess Rodgers, but okay. This is the interesting part. He tweeted this. There's the acknowledgement that Denver was a mess for Hackett. But Saleh's own background with Hackett and having worked with Hackett when he called plays at the end of 2016 helped cut through all of that. More or less, the Jets saw that Hackett lost a political war in Denver. What was the political war? Was it Russ?
Was it like actual politics?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it was Russell Wilson.
Okay.
I think it was, although Hackett wanted Russ. When they hired Russ, he was all in.
Like team politics? Because we kind of got that feeling that there was some division in that locker room, whether it was the defense against the offense, the team against Russ, or the team against Hackett. Everything was kind of just all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, and Hackett was put in a really bad spot, I will admit, because you hired the new head coach and then you hired Russell Wilson, who Hackett was excited about. But the pressure went way up, and then when Russ wasn't performing well, it's got to be Nathaniel Hackett, because he was fine the year before that. Even though Seattle wasn't very good, his numbers were still pretty good. I guess there's the Russell stuff. What else was there? George Payton hiring Jerry Rosberg to look over his shoulder? Did that hurt Nathaniel? It seemed to help at the time, the game management, but this is the theme in Denver right now. This must stem from Greg Penner. I'm sorry, but it must. Nathaniel Hackett couldn't manage a game. So what did they do?
Got Jerry.
They got Jerry. He couldn't really call plays effectively while trying to manage the game, who we also had Jerry to help him with. So what did they do?
Gave it to Clint Kubiak. Or, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was, yeah, it was Kubiak first, yeah. George Payton couldn't hire the right coach. So what did Greg Penner do to George Payton?
Took away his power.
Took away his power. And said, I'm going to do it. You know what's going on here? This is corporate. Walmart, Billy can't stack the shelves right, so now you have to answer to Manager John. Oh, Manager John, you can't get Billy to stack the shelves right, so Manager John, now you got to answer to General Manager Bill. This is a bad look, if you think about it. Everything that has happened in the last year, Nathaniel Hackett can't manage the game, so I'm hiring somebody to micromanage you. You can't call plays, so I'm hiring somebody to do that for you. George, you didn't hire the right coach, so I'm going to do it for you. And who are you? Who's Greg Penner when it comes to football? I'm just telling you guys, this whole thing, you talk about, oh, Sean Payton wants the Broncos because of the ownership situation. What are you talking about? Because they have billions? They all do. I get it. They're rich, really rich. They're the richest. But they all have billions. They all could give Sean Payton $25 million a year. Easy. Easy money for all of them. But you talk about having a stable ownership. If you want to be micromanaged, that sure seemed like that's the strategy. Something fails, we micromanage it. We throw more management on top of it. All right, second hour coming up. Dalton Connect, my player of the week. Up next, we'll be right back.